Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 17th of December, 2020. And we have an FOMC meeting in the bag now after last night's meeting and press conference from Fed Chair Powell. As I expected, actually, the Fed really didn't deliver anything new. But as I wasn't really sure of and did not necessarily expect was that the market stumbled very, very briefly on the fact that they didn't announce anything new in terms of extending purchases out to longer maturities. And the market just wiped away its concerns very quickly and got right back onto the everything up and treasuries somehow sideways trade. And I think this is market reaction. And we'll talk more about the FOMC with the folks on the call today. But the most concentrated reaction recently has been in Bitcoin, which is loving this environment and loving some of the news flow we have. There was an investment by this Raffer Investments that has invested some $744 million into Bitcoin, announcing that that represents on the order of 2.7% of their assets under management. And then Guggenheim's CIO, a pretty high profile person named Scott Minard, estimating a fundamental value, quote unquote fundamental, of some $400,000 for Bitcoin, simply based on its limited supply and if it's something similar to gold as a percentage of GDP. My favorite comment on that was our CIO, Stan Jakobsen, saying, well, if the whole Bitcoin is worth $400 billion, that's the same as a company that's not even making money like Zoom Communications. So, you know, why can't it be that much higher? So fundamental is a very loose word, but clearly this sort of proper institutional interest in the area is very significant. Put up a log chart on slide two where you can have a look at, we're not even sort of stressing the upper part of a second standard deviation where we'd be closer to $25,000 in coming days. So that's not a prediction. It's just to point out that although the local price action looks steep, I think it pays to look at a log chart whenever you can to get a sense of what the pace of appreciation is in log terms. But essentially everything up. And Peter, that includes even European equities finally sort of working out in recent days. And despite the higher euro working out of the doldrums they've been in, we saw the U.S. closing close to the all-time highs, it was a positive session, but not a hugely positive session. But I guess it's more interesting technically what's going on in something like DAX here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting when you have the backdrop of record case numbers, daily case numbers in Germany. You have a hospital sector that are basically getting stretched to the limit. And you also, basically across the continent, it's not looking very pretty. And despite of this, we're seeing a breakout of local highs in DAX. And we're only 1.5% from the highs before the drawdown began back in February and March. And it's I think that this will continue. I mean, European assets are extremely cheap. They obviously also cheap for a reason, but I think the main potential catalyst here is that I didn't see any signs in the FOMC that the Fed would not allow the long end of the yield curve to go higher if necessary on, you know, high economic activity or inflation, whatever it is, that markets will view as a cause for pushing rates higher. And if that's the case, if rates go above 10%, sorry, 1% in the US 10-year yield, in the US 10-year yield, then we'll begin to have this fight between rate sensitive growth stocks, which have been on a tear this year, and then the value stocks and this potential rotation, and that will definitely benefit Europe. And Europe is linked to emerging markets, so emerging markets performing well, and I think there's a link there. So I feel fairly optimistic, and I think also if the rollouts go well, I think the marginal benefit will be pretty big for Europe, because we have taken such a hit from COVID-19.
Yeah, I mean, to be a little bit fair on the European news flow side of things, and I've got a little bit that actually on the next chart. There's a little intraday chart of Eurodollar on slide four. You had the strong, much stronger than expected flash December services PMIs, which are, you know, pretty a significant surprise given, as you mentioned, the status of these lockdowns, et cetera. But I want to get to Althea's comments on what the Treasury market is thinking in a moment. And I think it's a bit of a head scratcher. There was less reactivity there than I would have thought was likely. Just because everything else is moving a lot, why shouldn't bonds get a bit of a signal from this meeting as well. But let's just go through briefly again. The FOMC policy statement change was very, very modest. The chief language was mostly limited to one sentence talking about they're going to continue their pace of QE purchases, the $80 billion in treasuries per month and the $40 billion in mortgage-backed securities until there's a substantial improvement in the metrics. I believe that was the substantial improvement. It was the key or substantial progress. I believe the actual language. So, basically an open-ended commitment. I guess the market kind of read that as being a bit more dovish than could have been expected. But there was absolutely no mention anywhere about lengthening treasury purchases as mentioned. And I kind of thought that Tim Dewey, again, and I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing his last name, his comment was kind of interesting because as I put in the little section that I cut out of the projections of the new Fed projections for December relative to September, you can see that they've upgraded pretty much everything, both GDP very slightly for coming years. For some reason, they downgraded 2023 by 0.1%, some silly bit of, trying to attempt that kind of accuracy for growth 3 years down the road. And then more significantly for the unemployment rate, how quickly that'll fall. PCE inflation was left unchanged for 2023, and therefore the dot plot is almost unchanged, with the vast majority expecting no change in the Fed funds rate until 2023. Only one more person expecting maybe a quarter percent hike by the end of basically 3 years from now. But by upgrading forecasts, and to get back to Tim Dewey's point, by upgrading forecasts but keeping the guidance sort of unchanged. He calls it a net easing. I thought that was an interesting way to put it. I'm not sure I fully agree with that, but it's one way to look at it. And regardless, the market reaction would underline that that's how they saw it, that the Fed is simply not at all in the mood to stand in the way of the market celebrating the potential liquidity. And before I get to you, I'll tell you just the one brief thing. I think maybe the market is well celebrating that there's a new stimulus checks likely on the way because the stimulus package focus in the U.S. has switched to bringing back this idea of checks into the mix, even if they would be half of the size of the original ones back from the spring. But Althea, what is the market thinking and not really reacting, or to your mind anyway, not really reacting that much to this Fed meeting here?
Yeah, John, I'm surprised as well, because until yesterday, there was a lot of expectation that the Fed at least would have increased the purchases of longer term maturity treasuries. And yesterday, yes, they have extended the quantitative easing program, but they didn't make any change yet. What we have seen in the treasury market is that yields didn't rise as exponentially as we were expecting. The 10-year yields rose a couple of basis points when the Fed released the statement, and they closed flat over the day at 0.92%. On slide 5, we have the 10-year treasury yields, and we can see that they are still trading within their ascending wedge that they have been trading in since August until today. And it's obvious that yields are poised to rise, and they are poised to try the 1% pivotal level. But the big question is when they are going to do that. And I think that at this point, John, we have just to wait for the stimulus package and Biden entering into the White House, which is just a few weeks away.
Yeah, and then related to that, of course, those two runoff elections for the Senate, that would make a huge difference if both of those fall to Democrats. And then I suppose maybe sort of weighing in the mix a little bit yesterday was that very weak U.S. retail sales figure for November, underlining how important that big stimulus push was back in the spring, because you're seeing a fall off increasing further from rather weak October numbers, which were revised actually down further. And the November level, it was extremely bad. Let's see what we have. Minus 1.1% on the headline. That was versus a slightly positive number expected. And the revision was minus 0.4%. And then the core as well, the X auto and gas number at minus 0.8 versus a almost unchanged expected. And then likewise, a minus 0.3% revision. The NAHB housing market survey came off a bit more than expected, although it was at almost insane record levels in November. So that's not particularly a bad news item there, but it just underlines maybe that this market is going to be dependent on new stimulus constantly coming in to keep these figures higher, at least on the retail sales side and consumption side. And then as Stan Jakobsen also fears, the whole Christmas cycle of returns and so on could be affected certainly by these lockdowns and a very ugly COVID winter we're going to be suffering over the next couple of months before we have any chance of getting out to the other side with vaccines, etc. Now, briefly, to get through the rest of the agenda here, and we've got Ola on the line patiently waiting for his moment, because commodities are a very important part of the mix here and rising. But I want to talk a little bit about Brexit. It's important to note that cable, with the weak dollar and the sterling trying to put in a rally here, is poking above 135. It's a massive chart level. You can see that on slide 6. It looks like, from the headlines, suggesting that only the fisheries item is the last issue remaining. And we don't think the Brexit deal is going to fall apart only on fisheries. So somehow, behind the lines, behind the scenes, there's been some sort of agreement on the state aid. And the indication might be that they would agree to keep the current terms of trade rolling into the new year with some sort of political framework agreed before everything is signed off in the new year. That would certainly be a positive for sterling if we finally do get this last second breakthrough. All of the announcements from both sides were sounding a little bit more optimistic than they have in previous days. So it really does look like they're going to try to pull off a short term or a last minute miracle, if you will. If the dollar continues lower here, I think cable has room to go to 140 rather quickly, euro sterling to break down a few figures. But as I've underlined before, I wonder medium to longer term that we get a rather low ceiling for any sterling rally, because many of the things that are driving the dollar weaker are really also the case for the UK, structural deficits, etc. Of course, the UK and the pound starting at a very different level, exchange rate rise wise, relative to what's been a quite strong dollar before the recent couple of months. But what are your thoughts? And we have a Bank of England today. I'm not sure they have much to say with hopes of vaccines, et cetera, hopes of a Brexit deal. They need to sit and wait on, sit on their hands a bit here. Any thoughts on gilts here, Althea?
Yes, John. Well, gilts have been, the yields on gilts have been rising since last week until today. Last week, they touched a point of 0.15%. And yesterday, they closed at 0.27%. But throughout the day, they rose to touch 0.33%. So what's happening here is that as it seems that a Brexit deal is likely, yields are softening up. And as you can see in chart, in slide number 7, here we have a chart showing the 10-year yields. And the fact that since August until today, they've been trading within an ascending funnel. And in case we have a Brexit deal, they will most likely test the upper resistance line at 0.45%. And they will most likely continue to ascend to 1%. But what happens today with the Bank of England, I don't think that the BOE would take any action before actually seeing what a Brexit deal implies. So I think that we are going to have some generic comments. And at the next meeting, if we have a Brexit deal, they will take some actions if they see that the yields are rising too fast.
All right, and then you've brought in some thoughts on emerging markets, which, to my mind, I've just looked at your headline here, are at risk whenever you're talking about rising U.S. yields. At least at some point, they would be at risk if once U.S. yields rise enough to start impacting risk sentiment. But it sounds like you believe otherwise initially here. If we start to see rising U.S. yields.
Yeah, what happens here is that traditionally bond investors have been purchasing higher yielding fixed income securities such as emerging markets and high yield bonds in order to lock in a higher yield in case US interest rates would rise, because they offer a buffer against rising yields. But my question here is that we have seen a huge rally within the emerging market, not only this year, but in the past 15, 20 years, and the yields are lower and lower. Right now, the average yield of EM sovereigns is around 3.5%. So the question here, do they still offer a good buffer against rising US Treasury yields? And the answer is depends, because the thing is that we still have on lower rated EM sovereigns a good pickup over the treasuries. But when we look at better rated EM, such as, for example, Russia, which is one of my favorites, it's very hard to find within 10 years maturity a 2% in yield. So in case treasury yields rise in the US, they would not offer a good buffer against rising yields, especially in light of the fact that you have to buy longer maturities in order to get that 2% target. So I think that there is a little bit of upside still, but it's very limited at this point in time.
Okay. Let's get to you, Ola, briefly before we circle back to Peter on equity stories. We have, of course, the whole commodity complex is enjoying this and precious metals. And I thought it was great that you pointed out the gold-silver ratio yesterday, because we've seen significant further progress in that lower, as silver is really outperforming here. Pushing above $25.50 this morning, up 1.5% from yesterday's close-ish. What are your thoughts on the broader complex here and where commodity traders are focused after this FOMC meeting?
Well, John, it looks like we are gearing up for a strong continuation into 2021. So far, if these trends are being maintained, the weaker dollar, very low yield environment, and the expected push, the economic recovery from the vaccine rollout, then I think commodities could be caught in the crosshairs of this and get an additional boost. And as you can see on slide 11, it really is now only something like silver and gold and a couple of odd ones, natural gas, that is down since we had the first vaccine announcement on November 9. And with the rally we're currently seeing in gold and silver, we could potentially have a quite strong end of year push there as well. So generally a sector that is looking for further gains next year, partly also driven by the fact that that we are seeing emerging tightness coming into the market, and that tightness is reflected in the 1 year roll curve. As we mentioned on a couple of occasions over the past couple of months, it is now back into positive territory. So basically, holding a basket of 25 commodities is now giving you a positive roll yield. That's the first time since 2014 that is happening. So it just highlights that the market is starting to going from an oversupply to a more tightening situation.
All right. Now, one area, the equity market, we've seen a pretty strong bid into equities broadly, but some of the big leaders, at least, stumbling a bit relative to the price action recently. And among those, Google and Facebook. Peter, we had this big announcement. Well, we both noticed this article in FT. Take us through what's happening here with a fresh antitrust concerns concentrated this time, especially on Google.
Yeah, it's actually a fresh antitrust charged against Google coming on the back of one that came, I think, 2 weeks ago from 11 states. And that was the case where Google had paid Apple to provide it with traffic into its search engine over mobile. And that's still ongoing. And now a new one, it's 10 Republican majority-led U.S. states that are accusing Google of abusing its monopoly power. And this is the worst charge, that's colluding with Facebook to fend off competing online ad exchanges, and basically just, you know, creating this duopoly in U.S. online advertising markets. This is This is really explosive stuff if these 10 states have the right evidence for this. And but I, you know, you look at slide 9 and you look at the share price. I mean, you're looking at these technology powers. It's almost like they don't care about whatever is thrown at them. We'll see. I have a feeling that 2021 actually will be a seismic year for technology stocks. First of all, the our expectation of rising rates, but also the increased technology regulation, I think will increasingly change the sentiment and bake in a risk premium on technology stocks. I mean, you cannot ignore the tide that is going on in technology regulation. And we've always thought about the US being late to the game because they had the most to win from very powerful US technology companies. But it seems like local states and Washington are finally waking up and moving aggressively now. So there will be a lot of bad PR headlines in 2021 for the big tech companies, that's for sure.
Yeah. And then I'm not sure what you've been up to in quarantine over at your house, Peter, but for some reason you've got cannabis in your crosshairs.
Well, like Bitcoin, retail investors also like cannabis stocks, and especially Saxo clients have been engaging a lot in cannabis stocks over the years. And so we just have to highlight this merger that was announced yesterday between Aphria and Tilray, combining to become the world's largest cannabis producer. I think it's to some extent, I wrote about it yesterday, and you can see that on analysis.sax. So the combined company, I mean, it's basically two weak players that are trying to combine and create some economics of scale. I mean, the combined company will have revenue of 764 million. It will create an operating loss of 132 and a negative free cash flow of $500 million dollars. And so, but hopefully with the growth rate for the combined growth rate of these two companies is around 58% currently. So that takes the company on a trajectory to, you know, move beyond $1 billion in revenue next year. And then hopefully we'll get to that economics of scale inflection point where we begin to see positive cash flow generation. That's really much needed. And in our article, we link, and you can see the headline on slide 10, can the cannabis industry turn growth into profits? That was a what we call a thought starter article we wrote back in February, and the case is that we looked at all the cannabis companies, I think 23 of the largest ones, and they're basically generating as much in negative free cash flow as they generate in revenue. So it's a very unhealthy industry, and I continue to be negative on the industry. But hopefully, this merger is what we need, or what the industry needs to consolidate and get that very important economics of scale. Because you cannot continue as an industry to burn $3 billion in free cash flow on the same amount of revenue, because it will constantly require more equity issuances, and at one point investors just simply give up, and these companies are already to some extent loaded with debt. So it's a tough one. I we just wanted to put it out there, because if anything successful is going to happen, it's probably going to happen from this merger. So if you're into this space, look for this merger.
It's kind of interesting because unlike tobacco, as far as I understand, marijuana is rather easy to grow. It's like a weed, but the tobacco companies certainly have a long history of staggering profitability, even when the regulation descended upon them and fines, and they were just constantly able to raise prices and whatever. But an interesting rundown there.
But to be fair, John, I mean the tobacco industry was also very good at morphing into what we've seen in the technology space, where you have, you know, five super companies oligopoly. basically owning all the brands, right? And we'll probably end up in the same space in the cannabis industry. Let's see.
Okay, let's very briefly run down the calendar highlights for today and the rest of the week. We have a number of central bank meetings out today. We're not expecting much from any of them, actually. The Swiss National Bank, by the way, Switzerland labeled a currency manipulator by the US, and the S&P just shrugged it off and said they're going to continue with their policy. So interesting to see if that results in something more down the road. The Swiss franc was not particularly reactive to that news item, and they've been intervening less clearly in recent weeks as the site deposits have actually fallen in Switzerland. We also have the Norway Central Bank out, and the Bank of England, as already discussed, Czech Central Bank, Mexican Central Bank, etc. I think most of these are sitting on their hands waiting for incoming data. Let's speaking of which, we have the weekly claims. Let's see if that is still continuing in the wrong direction in the U.S. after a very ugly pop-up last week in that initial claims figure. And that'll be the most important one on my list later for today. And then to close out the week, retail sales for the UK and IFO survey from Germany tomorrow. For now, there's a lot going on out there. Everything's up except for US treasuries, which are sideways. I think the market gets more interesting if US yields finally go up and start to try or test above 1%. But so far, they're prone and not doing much at all at the moment. For now, we'll call it a day, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.